can you ask me, Kevin Smith, two things I know in this world. Black and white convenience store movies and podcasting, man. So when I give you a podcast suggestion, people tend to listen. I'm about to drop some on you right now. Check out a great variety of podcasts on the Odd Pods Media Network, man. I'm talking shows Super Media Brothers, Married with Television, The 500 Section Lounge, From the Middle Podcast, Pod Askew, BFYTW, and Infectious Groove, all proud members of the Odd Pods Media Network. They make me so happy, spittle flies out of my mouth when I talk about them, man. I love anybody that creates a podcast network, and the good folks at Odd Pods have done exactly that. Go listen to all the podcasts on Odd Pods Media Network right now and tell them Silent Bob sent you. And when they say, wait, I thought he doesn't talk. And you're like, yeah, well, he talks one line per movie. And then go like, what? And the one line in a movie told you to go listen to Odd Pods Media Network? And then be like, look, it was just a fucking sign-off catchphrase. Get off my dick. And then you'll have made a new friend.
I'm Midnight Agent Raw.
And I'm Okame.
We are the Super Media Bros Podcast. And we are founding members of the Odd Pods Media Network.
Little ditty about Jeff and Diane.
I smell intercourse.
Leave Santa some MILF and cookies.
All that in whores.
Santa, stop kissing my mom.
On the lips.
Asshole. I mean, like we need an excuse to beat Santa Claus's ass into the pavement.
While you're sticking his candy cane up a mother's... Yeah.
Yeah, but here we are. Fuck you, Santa.
Up in them moms.
Up in them Christmas trees. Welcome to the Super Media Bros Podcast. I'm Midnight Agent Roll.
And I'm not Santa Claus.
I'm glad he's not Santa Claus.
He would be punching the shit out of him. Honestly, I hate Christmas so much, I'd be punching myself.
If y'all are wondering out there why we're sticking with mostly horror this Christmas, that this is why.
It's the only thing we can fucking tolerate.
Right, especially when the year 2020 just happened, and it's like, oh yeah, 2020, we need all the good shit, you know, to come towards the end of the year. Well, we're going to bring you the good shit via horror movies.
And it's coming right in your face. It's
candy cane, white and red, all over your face.
That's a disorder right there. You got to get yourself checked if it's white and red.
No shit. This is Cult Cinema Showdown 62, and this week we are covering Christmas Evil versus Silent Night Bloody Night, not to be confused with Silent Night Deadly Night, which we covered last Christmas. So go check that episode out.
Which to me is just, it's funny how Santa is just a fucking psychopath. If you really want to, yeah, get deep and dirty with it.
He likes to get deep and dirty with it. And it seems like that's almost the theme with every one of these movies, that Santa Claus is like the antagonist or whatever the fuck.
Not so much in Silent Night, Bloody Night, but yeah.
These two movies, holy crap, there's a lot to unpack with both of these sons of bitches. Which one would you like to go with first?
I mean, might as well go with Silent Night, Bloody Night first.
Oh, right. Silent Night, Bloody Night, aka Death House, is a 1972 Canon Films release. Yes, you heard that correctly. More before all the schlock that a lot of you guys that like Canon Films, like, got used to in the 80s and kind of the early 90s, but holy shit, this one tried to be more of a straightforward, you know, whodunit mystery POV slasher type flick.
I enjoy how the movie started off, because as much as I hate the music, the church organ was playing, I think it was Silent Night, if I'm not mistaken, and we get the view of the house and everything like that, and then just out of nowhere, this fucking guy comes running out of the house on fire, falls into the snow, goes right back into the house, like the actual camera, and it's slowly panning from the wall in that room, and you can see in the window on the left-hand side, the guy is still on fucking fire.
I know, it was so funny, because it's this nice, like, organ music playing, and just, we're just torching outside. I'm just waiting on kids to run up and just fucking start roasting marshmallows on his corpse.
Chester's roasting.
Chester's roasting. He is an open fire. No, Wilfred Butler dies by fire outside of his mansion.
Why? And, we don't know.
But my favorite part of that was the narrator accidentally burned himself. Like, bitch, how? How? I just want
to
know.
He was roasting chestnuts too close to the fire.
I wonder if he was doing that and trying to, like, he was roasting chestnuts and then taking cookies out of the oven at the same time. And it's like a gas stove, so he just goes up in flames.
I gotta get ready for Santa. Oh, shit!
Oh, shit! Just
Santa
torches. Oh shit! Just torches himself. It's pure torture. The whole thing. Nobody was at this dude's funeral. First of all,
but what, two people?
The funeral director and I believe the person in charge of his will and testament. Which we find out that he leaves his property to his grandson Jeffrey, but he has to leave the house as is, as it's found. Nothing touched, nothing changed. The house is like empty for 20 fucking years. Like there's like a narration that goes throughout this movie, but it's sold. And then as it's sold, there's a shot of a dude escaping from a mental institution. And the plot is that Jeffrey's lawyer, whose name is John Carter, not of Mars, but still, we're going to just say John Carter of Mars, and his mistress, Ingrid, they show up to sell the house, and they just use it as their like personal like fuck mansion.
Yeah, pretty much. But at this point, when we're getting into the down and dirty, basically, we get the POV of some random person just mooching into the house. This is where my line came in earlier whenever we were introducing the episode, was they were getting into it and he goes up the stairs, or she, whoever the fuck this is, we don't know, and just... I looked at that scene and was like, I smell intercourse.
You must die.
But it just seems like that's the thing with most of these Christmas horror films. Like, if anybody's having any kind of intercourse or sex or whatever, you're fucking going to die.
And here's the funniest part about this particular scene. They go and have a meeting with the townspeople because they're saying that they have to sell the house and they're going to sell it for $50,000 cash because they can't get anybody to buy this motherfucker. So they're going to sell it to what, the mayor, the police officer, the sheriff, and there's this mute guy that doesn't speak a word.
He's
and,
the newspaper. Like,
yeah, he's the newsboy.
And then they had the telephone operator that runs all the switchboard, basically.
That's right.
Yeah, it was like the community circle of that town.
Right. Before fucking John Carter of Mars and Ingrid go up the stairs to make their fucking Christmas time whoopee, because this is 1972, so we're just going to say Christmas time whoopee. Bro, they sat at this table and ate dinner for like 5 fucking hours solid. Had to be.
They didn't even eat, honestly. They just sat there and just talked.
I was just laughing, though, because they're in this really huge, nice-ass mansion. And they're eating sandwiches.
I mean, can't afford anything fancy, apparently.
Not until we get that $50,000 and afford it. But the whole thing is they're trying to test the phone lines of this place and like... Because they get killed. Let's just, you know, come right out with it. They get butchered in bed, and it's pretty fucking funny. Mm-hmm. But right before this happens, the sheriff fucking calls the house, and Tess, who is the phone operator, patches them through, and John answers the phone. And the sheriff's like, are the lines working? And he's just like, yeah, they're working just fine. And I'm sitting here like, yeah, I guess so. You're fucking talking on it.
I mean, you would think, but yeah.
You pointed out something hilarious about Tess's headquarters, though, and I fucking died laughing.
Girl was like in a fucking Harry Potter cupboard. Like it was the stairs that had like the room right underneath the stairs. And it was just a small little like cupboard, basically.
It's like she got fucking punished and you must work under the stairs, bitch.
No whoopee for you.
You can whoopee your ass, maybe, yeah. But. Oh, God, I forgot that one line where John was, he's trying to be all sly and like give Ingrid this fucking gift or whatever. It's like a small present or some shit. He's like, I'm going to the car for some cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
The way he emphasizes rets.
He's about to ret something.
Don't get lonely.
Or else.
Yeah, dude, I swear to God. He's like, don't get lonely. It's a small gift in a box. Let me propose to you with this pack of cigarettes.
Who uses that line to don't get lonely? It's like, what do you expect her to do?
Farmersonly.com. Yeah. Because you don't.
Christian Mingle.
ChristianMingle.com. Oh, shit.
Or Christian Farmers. We don't care.
It doesn't matter. Christian Farmers.
Get on Tinder.
Yeah.
Well, Tinder, none of that shit was a thing back then, but you know.
Right. But they fucking called the police. The killer calls the police and just whispers, you need to come here, blah, blah, blah. And he's just like, you need to come here. And then the dude at the police station, keep calm. I'm coming.
I came. Okay.
You pointed that out. You're like, this sounds like the whitest guy ever during sex.
I'm coming. It's like if Morgan Freeman was a white man. I'm coming.
But, like, to make a long story short, Jeff, like, rolls up. We don't even know who he is at first. He just rolls up to the mayor's daughter's house, whose name is Diane. And the way that we get introduced to both of these characters at the same fucking time is just ridiculous. She unlocks the door for him, doesn't know who the fuck it is, and she just pulls a gun on him, just holds him at gunpoint the whole time. They're having this really calm talk and conversation.
Honestly, people, in the middle of the fucking night, why would you unlock your door and hold a gun out and say, yeah, come in? You're just inviting danger at this point.
I wonder if she's one of those like adrenaline junkies where she's like, I got this. She must have watched Derek Savage's Gun Self-Defense for Ladies movie, because remember old girl? She's like, yeah, I don't remember what the fuck that plot was, where she answers the door with that shotgun. She's like, yeah, Dave's right here. Hang on. But the movie is, for the most part, it just really plays it straight. But there's a lot of really hilarious happenstance things that go on where, like, at one point, they're all, like, dying. Like, everybody, like, people keep fucking dropping like flies, and they're trying to, like, figure out who's the killer and all this other bullshit. Jeff and Diane drive by the sheriff's vehicle that's like parked in the middle of nowhere by a graveyard, because he's like, oh, the fucking grave of Wilford, whatever the fuck his name is, has been disturbed, and he gets axed. But like there was so much stupid shit where they were like, Jeff is talking to Diane. She's like, well, why are you selling the house? And he's just like, I need the money. I need to buy Christmas presents. I need the fucking money. It's my money and I need it now.
I need to pay child support.
Oh my God, that's a lot of fucking money.
Yeah. A lot of fucking kids.
Right. But dude, oh my fuck. He's fucking talking to her after all this shit. And just this quote. My lawyer's missing. Strange calls. Sheriff's missing. Want to go to my house? And the first thing I thought about in the middle of that would have been funny is like the 80s date, or not the five or six stores video. Is my lawyer's missing. Strange calls. Sheriff's missing. Can I ask you kind of a weird question?
Want to go to my house?
Get fucked. There is like such sexual tension between Jeff and Diane. You could cut it like a fucking hot knife through butter.
But you know, it's not so much him. It's more her. Like immediately, as soon as she realized who he was, it was just like, oh, damn, money.
$50,000. That's a lot of money in 1972.
Give me that rich cock, boy. Mm. But yeah, they basically found the sheriff. He's dead. And we don't know what the fuck is going on, because literally everybody's dying. The killer, quote, called and told Tess, like, I know who you are, and I remember everything that happened kind of scenario. So she got scared shitless, called this one to come relieve her from the switchboard. And she's like, I need you to come and relieve me right now. She's like, I can't. She's like, why? I was like, I'm watching TV. Bitch, let me use that excuse at work now and see if I get away with that shit.
Cody, can you come in today?
No, I can't.
What's wrong?
I'm watching TV. It's just taking up all my day.
What the hell?
But yeah, she eventually goes in. Tess goes to the house. She just enters the house. And I didn't even realize this until after people were explaining to me, so don't make me feel stupid for mentioning this. But the clock was stuck at 1:30. Throughout the whole entire film.
Oh my God.
But it would keep chiming at 1:30, like a normal. And I was like, okay, maybe it rings at every half hour too, but I'm just stupid like that. But the thing is, it was stuck at 1:30 through the whole fucking film. But besides that, Tess walks into the house and the whole house is fucking pitch black. And eventually the killer pops up and he's whispering something to her. I forgot what the fuck he said to her.
I don't remember either.
But he was like, well, take my hand.
We're off to Never Never Land.
And it's literally the chopped off hand. I think we skipped ahead.
No, we didn't, because it gets to that point, because I know where you're going. But I had to laugh at this sequence too, because he bludgeons her to death with a candlestick, okay? And it's immediately like that line in Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey where fucking death is playing them in Clue, and he just... I believe Colonel Mustard did it in study with candlestick. Sorry, Death, you lose. It was Professor Plum.
Mm-hmm.
I said Plum. That's how I felt watching this, because he just beats her ass with this fucking candlestick. She's just dead. And then the missing hand makes all the sense in the world. And getting to that point, this is where Jeff and Diane eventually like come across this happening, because... At one point, they're talking to the mute guy, and they're trying to figure out where to go and what the best course of action is, and the funniest fucking musical cue in the world. They're just having a normal conversation. It's like, he's trying to basically like write on paper what he's trying to say to them and just kind of like, you know, act it out. And he and Jeff just looks at him and he's just like, do you want to drive to the house? Dung!
Intense close up to the face.
It's like he's not terrified of anything else but driving. Yeah.
It's like, but I can't use my hands to ding my bell.
No, he can't use his hands because they're driving to this fucking house and this guy just comes out of nowhere. This is the middle of the night. They're driving the fucking car and they just fucking hit him. They hit this guy with the car and he just fucking tumbles down a snowy hillside like an embankment. Come to find out it's the mute guy and his hands have been cut off. So that's where the hand came from.
Yep. Because see, I'm kind of like going all over the place with describing this film, but I think the funniest thing about this movie to me was that guy in particular, because every time he talked, he would always ding one of those little like
service bells.
The service bells. So it just makes me wonder, like, how does this guy interact with anything that doesn't revolve like a yes question, like a yes response in general? So it's like, how does he have intercourse or any kind of pleasure like display besides like his face? Like he's about to come and just goes ding. Ding, 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 ding. But what was ironic about that kill was the fact that he got his hands cut off. So he's like, he can't testify in fucking court now if he ever could, you know, because he can't ding his bell. Basically. So yeah, everybody dying. Left and right.
I love whenever he goes to check on him. Then when Jeff goes to fucking check him, he's like, he's dead. No shit. You fucking hit him with a car.
Fucking vehicular homicide.
You fucking.
Vehicular manslaughter.
He fucking Hadouken the fuck out of this guy with his car. Okay.
Fucking E-Honda'd him.
Literally. E-Honda Civic'd his ass right off the fucking embankment.
He ate Honda.
Yeah, he did. The mayor who. Diane is the mayor's daughter. Okay. And. They all wind up at this house because they're trying to figure out like who the fuck is the murderer and all this other crap. Well, like you said earlier, Jeff comes across this diary, which this is where the movie just really goes like into just fuckery.
Mm-hmm.
To make a long story short, the diary basically kind of recounts that Wilfred had grown resentful and hostile toward like all the hospital staff because he winds up turning his whole mansion into a hospital.
Because he was treating his daughter and a lot of the inmates in the town because there was no other place to go and he didn't trust hardly anybody. So he paid people to come stay and treat his daughter and the inmates at his own house.
Yeah, because his daughter was raped. Like that's a subplot is that his daughter, who is Jeff's sister, is raped. And.
Well, no.
I'm sorry. It's her.
It was his mom.
Yeah, that's right.
Because he's the grandson of Wilfred.
But yeah. Yeah, so basically come to find out, he's inbred.
Yeah.
Because
Wilfred fucked his daughter. And they basically, they had this moment where he let out the inmates because he was so fucking fed up with the hospital staff or the doctors and shit in the house. The inmates literally stormed the house and just murdered everybody in there and killed off the daughter as well.
And here's where the twist ending or the twist of the plot happens, where basically the mayor, the mute guy, Tess, and the sheriff were all inmates at this asylum, that they have actually assumed the roles of these important people in town. Wilfred is not dead. He faked his death and has been living in insane asylums near and around the area. And he's been the killer, exacting his revenge on the former inmates. So when Jeff finds this out, he just happens to be walking. His dad just comes walking downstairs because, I mean, this is his fucking dad at this point.
Let's not forget how quickly he dressed up.
Oh, my God.
As soon as Diane read that whole entire montage, like, he got into this, like, plum, like, smoker's jacket. And he looked like the fucking, like, count of the house, basically. Like, he was just this regal-looking fucker at this point.
Like Count Chocula?
He had a fucking handgun. The mayor,
that's right,
came into the house trying to hunt down whoever was killing everybody. They ended up exchanging blows, and the mayor died, but Jeff didn't. He didn't die all the way, basically. And Diana was freaking the fuck out. Well, come to find out, here comes Wilfred down the stairs. And she's literally losing her shit at this point.
Yeah, because he starts having flashbacks of his daughter. And he's picturing her as his daughter. So, like, Jeff finally dies. And so she takes, I think it's either his or her father's gun and shoots Wilfred. And Jesus fuck, dude. Like, she just looks at, like, it flashes to, like, a year later. And she's looking at this house and it's about to be demolished. And that's it.
That's all the movie wrote.
And I feel like the movie was a little drawn out. I mean, I'm not saying it was, like, boring, but it was a little underwhelming at certain points, I think, save for like the few like funny moments with the musical cues and just the stupid way that they wrote some of the lines in there. Like obviously with the telephone, is it working? And then like just stupid. I don't know, man. It was kind of an oddball movie.
Wasn't terrible, but
yeah, it could have been better.
Yeah. But yeah, that was Silent Night, Bloody Night.
Welcome to the Modest Cube Podcast. I am.
Whoa, dude. No. This is our promo, not the show. I'm Rico.
Oh, sorry. I'm CJ, and we're the hosts of the Podeskew Podcast.
We're fans of pretty much anything and everything pop culture, including movies, TV shows, books, video games, comics, music, and of course, Kevin Smith. Now, while we do keep our fingers on the pulse of Silent Bob, he certainly doesn't need our help in promoting him.
You got that right. We do our own thing, with inspiration from the man himself and his mantra of why not. We've got stories about celebrities, we've interviewed theories of our own for certain movies, and we can usually tend to have a great debate about anything.
We also do commentaries on movies. Sometimes we ask our fans what they want to watch with us. So if you love the timbre of our vocal cords and want to watch a movie at the same time, give us a listen.
Stay tuned every Monday, there's always something new. And if you've been good this year, we may even give you a bonus episode from time to time.
So please be good and subscribe to and enjoy Podeskew. Founding member of the Odd Pods Media Network.
Let's move on to Christmas Evil, aka You Better Watch Out. Picture it. Christmas Eve, 1947. Young child Harry sees Santa Claus groping his mother and kissing on her vagina downstairs. It was his dad dressed as Santa Claus, so he hauls ass up. I know we're jumping right into it, but I swear to God, the movie opens just like this. He hauls ass up to the attic and shatters this fucking snow globe and just cuts his hand with it, and then we get our opening credits. But he has a brother, by the way. Let's not, you know, forget that. He's got a brother. Cody, 33 years later, what is Harry up to?
He is, what is it, a manager of a toy factory? Because I wasn't sure if he was like a supervisor or if he owned the toy factory.
He's definitely like a low-end.
Yeah, he's like a low-end shift lead, basically. But yeah, come to find out, Harry was so scarred from that night on Christmas Eve that he embodies his lifestyle outside of work as Santa Claus, as Christmas, anything to do with the holiday. I mean, at this point in the film, it's pretty much like right before Thanksgiving, and he's dressing his whole entire house up in just nothing but Christmas shit.
Yeah, and throughout the movie, up until we get to the peak of it, he's slowly piecing together a costume of Santa Claus. This dude is so creepy to the point that he's like spying on the neighborhood kids around his area from his rooftop, determining if they're naughty or nice, and actually fucking keeps tabs on them. But I was laughing at the one scene where he sees the kid with the fucking Hustler magazine or the, I was like Penthouse or something.
Penthouse, yeah.
And he was just like cutting nudes out of it, and he was just like, hee hee hee.
So he grabs his like naughty list and just starts writing. It's like, I forget all he puts in there. It's like crude or lewd intentions or some shit like that. He apparently threw rocks at some neighbor's kids or something like that. I don't remember all of the shit that he wrote down, but yeah, he has actual books of what each kid has done on the naughty or nice list.
Dude, the fucking force in which he runs back to his fucking room to grab this book. I mean, he's just fucking runs. It's almost like if the Roadrunner took off and left a fucking cloud of dust behind him.
I mean, if that little kid was Penthouse, he was definitely hustling.
Yeah, he don't play, boy.
No.
But all his coworkers make fun of him at the toy factory. Like his coworkers, his assistants, everybody that's even down to like the assembly line workers just fuck with him.
Yeah, to the point where one guy even fucked with him by saying, you know, I need you to switch with me because I have some kind of emergency tonight. So Harry stayed behind and worked the late shift for this guy. Well, as he was walking home, he decides to stroll by one of the, I think it was like a bar or a pub or something. And lo and behold, there was the coworkers and that one particular one that needed off. And in audible distance, you can hear him say, you know, I can't believe I fucking convinced that idiot to take my shift. Basically, it's in some form or fashion. And that just like made Harry snap even more because he's just fucking pissed.
Along his journey back to his house, he comes across this couple in a window and he's just spying on them about to make out and have sex on the sofa, which it turns out this is his brother and his brother's wife.
Mm-hmm.
Ew.
It's like disgusting family habits.
But anyway, like the next morning, he fucking calls and cancels his Thanksgiving plans with them just to watch the Macy's Day Parade and eat cereal on his fucking couch.
Yeah, it's just like a homegirl from the last movie. She's like, no, I can't make it. Oh, I'm watching fucking TV.
Cody, can you come into work?
No, I'm good.
Wow, what's wrong, dude?
I'm watching Santa being blown up. That's the only reason why he watched that damn thing.
Right. This is, you see, like, he gets so intense whenever the scene in the parade where Santa Claus just comes through. Because it's usually, I think Santa Claus is usually, like, the very last thing that comes through. And he just scrambles to the place, like, TV, like, right in front of his face, like, ooh. He's going to start jerking it.
And what I thought was really funny and cool at the same time was whenever you get to that scene, the TV itself, like the old school, like rotary dial TV, it was the exact shape minus like being a little off on the side of my actual TV screen. Like it almost looked like it was the TV itself.
Yeah. And we started talking like if they ever make a flat screen that is shaped like that and the screen itself of that television is the screen, like I would fucking buy it in a heartbeat.
Oh, yeah.
Remember the scene where he's walking? I think I don't remember where he's walking to, but he looks across the street at the neighborhood kids and he's like, oh, what do you wish for this year? And everybody's wishing for what they want. And then the one kid's like, I wish I had a lifetime subscription to Penthouse. Triggered.
Mm-hmm.
Like that night, I think it's the same kid, if I'm not mistaken, like that fucking night, he like,
oh, this scene,
dude, yeah. He psychotically runs across the street to peek in on this child through his window. He reaches down, and what I can only fucking assume is, like, their shit ditch or something, because that's what it looks like.
It looked like fucking sewage of some sort, but it was probably, like, mud. Like, freshly made mud. I don't know how.
Right. He just reaches down and grabs it and rubs it all over his face, and then he leans on the house to leave handprints and a kiss print with his lips in, like, this fucking shit water.
But here's the problem, though. Like, why did you have to cover your whole fucking face just to leave a kiss impression? Like, I don't understand that. You could have avoided wiping so much shit all over your fucking face.
It's literally shit at this point. Like, I'm not even going to speculate. I'm just going to call it how I see it. It's poop.
But this kid was being rushed out of the house by his mom, and they were heading to the car, and the kid stopped at the fucking door to the car and saw Harry in the bushes by accident, walks over there slowly, and fucking Harry just like freaks out and like scares the shit out of him. And he's like, Mom, there's a fucking monster in the bush. And he just slaps the shit out of him.
Like, real fucking hard, dude.
I had it with your fucking shit, basically.
I love that you went British with that. I've had it with your fucking shit. Smacks the fuck out of him.
Get in the fucking car.
Get in the fucking car, you little cretin.
You little wanker.
Yeah, so that poor little bastard's gonna have, like, trust issues from now on, I'm sure. Mom, there's this strange poo-covered man outside of my window. Never mind. Just goes to sleep. So Harry winds up sleeping in his fucking Santa Claus outfit, okay? And then the next day, there's a company Christmas party. And the company's called Jolly Dreams, by the way, which is whatever.
Take it as you will.
Yeah. So the owner, like the CEO of the company, is announcing via like this little television, like I guess a VHS tape, that the company is going to donate toys to the children at the local hospital, provided that the production increases at the company where they're pumping out more toys.
Mm-hmm.
And that the employees also have to contribute with their own money. Well, apparently Harry kind of sees through this and realizes, because it's a fucking scheme to basically, you know, get more money, but not really provide shit for the kids.
Right.
So he's kind of like got a legit point. He tells this new guy off that's like an executive. He basically tells him to go fuck himself. And so that night he winds up taking all the fucking toys from the factory and he breaks them. And then he fills bags with dirt because you know where this is going.
But no, he ends up giving some of that dirt to fucking Moss, which is the little kid that won the fucking Penthouse magazines.
Right, because he starts on Christmas Eve, he's starting to like, he's gluing the beard to his face and the eyebrows and shit. He's pretty much just becoming Santa Claus. He truly is convinced that I am Santa Claus. So he has also made his own like toys at home, like from scratch. He paints his, the fact that this man is driving a van is very telling too. It's like, this is like a fucking pedo van, and paints the Santa Claus with the sleigh and the reindeer on this fucking, like, I think it's a Dodge Ram, but it's just really like,
I mean, it's a Chester Molester van at this point.
So yeah. Fucking Scary Harry.
Mm-hmm.
Out on the prowl.
That's two Harrys that ride in vans around neighborhoods.
Yeah. Okay. Plumbing. And then I'm Santa Claus.
Yep.
The first thought that came to my mind was Vanta Claus. Because this fucking guy. Here comes Vanta Claus. Is this where, no, this isn't where it happens. Because the fucker gets stuck in a chimney at one point.
Well, yeah, because he has this like mental breakdown that he couldn't even fit down the chimney to this house. But I know at one point he does that. He goes to the local hospital where all the kids, and he's trying to convince the security guard to let him in. The guy's just like, no, he ain't coming in here. He's like, but I got gifts, basically. Oh, here's one right here. Here's a present. So the guard goes, gets help, and all the nurses and help and everything like that come out, and they realize that, you know, this guy was legitimate. So he gives them, you know, bags of toys for the kids, or bags of presents, basically. And he takes off, and he's being legit. He's being a decent citizen, decent human being at this point. Then he gets to, I'm trying to remember.
Church.
The church. And he was walking up to the steps, and they all start pouring out after the mass was over. And there was like three or four hecklers trying to get a rise out of Harry. And he was just like, no, don't mess with me, basically. Dude, fucking Harry grabs a fucking toy soldier that had the little bayonet stuck out, and he just jabs a fucker in the eye straight through.
Oh, and God, dude, the gore effect on this was so good. It actually made me kind of gag a little, because you see you see it pierce his eyeball, and then there's just this sound, and it's like green goop and blood and pus at the same time. Oh, I winced when I saw that.
But yeah, I think he murders like three of the people that were heckling him.
Yeah, because he had to ask them a question or two.
Yeah. So he takes off in his merry van.
He fucking split their wigs and fucking hauled ass.
And it's just ironic how does he expect to get away from this? Because everybody knows what the fuck he looks like. He's dressed as Santa Claus in a fucking white van with Santa Claus on it. Dude, you fucked yourself.
You gave yourself away, you dumb shit.
So the whole neighborhood is on alert for finding Santa Claus.
So what does he do? He decides to go to another neighborhood party. It's so dumb, dude. Because they fucking think he's a homeless guy just dressed as Santa Claus. And they're just like, yeah, come party with us, dude. And he goes and
he has fun. You know, he gets all the kids excited. All the people are like, oh, yeah, you're a great person. And he just does the ho-ho-ho thing and Merry Christmas. And he has this speech. It's just like telling the kids, like, you know, if you be good, you know, Santa Claus will reward you with, you know, rewards. But if you be bad, then he starts like kind of getting real dark about it. And then he starts to laugh at the end of it. Like, dude, you're fucking psychotic.
Yeah. And like you can tell because some of the parents actually catch a little bit of it. And yeah. They're like, oh,
mm-hmm.
Like they're visibly bothered by this. But the kids are just so enamored by him. They're just like, yeah, fuck yeah. I mean, not like, it's fuck Santa. Yeah. And I love how at the end of it, I wish this would have been the line because he's like, I'll see you next year. And I wish he would have been like, thanks for the beer. I mean, see you next year. And fucking hauls ass.
Mm-hmm.
This is when he gets stuck in the chimney, though, because Frank is the guy that asked him to switch his shift with him.
Yeah, because he's trying to get into the house.
Yeah, and holy shit, dude. He almost legit is stuck in this thing. He's having to, like, beat the fuck out of the top of the brick chimney just to loosen it so he can get his suit out of there.
But what I don't understand is both these films have this issue right here. Who leaves their fucking door unlocked for people to just walk in? Because that's what they did. He left his fucking door unlocked. Harry walked in there and got literally, I mean, breathing on this guy and took a fucking pillow and just smothered the shit out of him. All while his wife, granted, they're in two separate beds, like twin size beds pushed together. She was right next to him, not even moving. She was just turned to the other side and he was like literally the entire fucking time. And as soon as he died and like kills over, he falls onto his wife And she starts freaking out, like, silently.
Yeah, because he wouldn't die, and he just took the fucking star off the... Because they have a Christmas tree over their bed.
Mm-hmm.
He takes the star off of it, and, I mean, he just slits his throat. But it's funny, because his throat is slit, and the way he falls onto his wife, he just... And he's looking at her, and she's so mortified that she can't... Like, she's trying to scream, but nothing is coming out. And then the kids are in the hallway, like, bye, Santa. And he's just like, bye, kids. And then the mom screams, and he's like, oops, gotta go. And he fucking runs away.
Santa done fucked up. Sorry.
Fucked up, kids.
No presents next year.
Merry Christmas.
But while all this is going on, everybody is finding Santa Claus dressed, like people dressed up as Santa Claus and doing the fucking, the police line up.
Yeah, because there's like five of them. None of them match. I mean, obviously they're all Santa Claus, but none of them actually get fingered for the job. Fingered. But meanwhile, his brother Phil and Jackie, which is his sister-in-law, are catching this on the television. And then Jackie's like, there's nothing wrong with your brother. And then Phil, without missing a beat, is like, he's an emotional cripple. He fucking goes to the Jolly Dreams factory, Harry does, in full Santa garb, and just activates the assembly line and just breaks all the fucking toys. And then Harry is just kind of driving around. Like, he calls Phil and just kind of gives this really like suicidal speech or whatever to him. But then he drives around in the van and gets stuck in the snow. So he's like, oh, fuck it. I'm going to get out and walk. Because there's like a shit ton of snowmen just lit up in this neighborhood.
But you come across the mob at this point.
And he's out in the middle. It looks like this apartment complex building or some shit. And all these kids are like, oh, it's Santa Claus. And they fucking run up to him. And they all recognize him. They're just like, this is the dude. And the kids are like defending him at one point. Like one of the people pulls a knife out on him. And the little girl fucking like takes the knife and runs up and is defending Harry with this. And me and you were both like, oh, fuck, don't do this.
Yeah, there are like four or five kids just surrounding Harry. And they were just adamant about not letting him get hurt. So the little girl gives Harry the knife. And Harry tries to walk away.
It reminds me of that, oh, that vine. What do you have in your hand?
A knife!
No!
But Harry tries to leave, and the dad who had the knife intercepts Harry. Harry kind of like nervously slices him. Like, I think it's on his jacket or something. And he drops the knife and he takes off. Well, this is the last straw right there.
Oh, yeah.
So everybody just randomly grabs a pre-made torch, like a physical like light with a fire torch, and they ransack the whole fucking town trying to find Harry.
Yeah, it's like every neighbor just knew exactly what day the tiki torches went on sale at Lowe's, and they were like, fuck it, let's just go buy this shit just in case we need to, you know, be a fucking fire torch mob.
Yeah, this pretty much is just like the end of Frankenstein where they were chasing the monster.
Fucking Harry looks around, the neighbors? Oh, shit! And runs.
Yep.
But I seriously just, I love that they all just have these torches ready to go. But he actually gets away from them, surprisingly gets the fuck away from them.
Yeah, he gets the van up and running and he takes off finally.
This is the other part that cracks me up about that same mob, and we'll get back to them in a second. But he drives to his brother's house, okay? His brother starts to choke him out because Harry is just like, you know, this is your fault because you're the one that told me that dad was Santa Claus and blah, blah, blah. And that really fucked me up and all this other shit. So Phil chokes him out like unconscious in front of his wife, who is just mortified at this point. And he goes and puts him in the van in the front seat. And dude, this is the lamest punch in cinema history. The window rolls down and Phil just kind of looks up and just fucking just punches him down. And drives off in the van.
But you know, I don't blame Harry for that because he literally just got shat on by his brother by choking his ass out.
And here's where the ending of the movie is, okay? That scene with his brother had to have been, what, like, I don't know, 5-10 minutes maybe?
At least.
The mob of people are still running. Like, they've not stopped. They're not winded. It's cold outside. They're marathon running. They look like Michelin tire guys. They're so bundled up with coats and shit. So how the fuck do they even, how are they not winded from this? I'll never understand, but they fucking find him.
Maybe they take turns like pushing each other over and rolling them around for a little bit.
Yeah, the ending kind of is ridiculous. Okay, so he's driving off away in this van, right? The fucking neighbors with the torches are keeping in pace with this van, as is Phil, who wakes up and somehow catches up to the van. Phil rolls down a hill like a jackass because he trips and just fucking rolls down into this like gullet area or wherever the fuck. The angry mob is still running and Harry drives the van off the bridge.
But it doesn't end like that. I know what you're thinking. Harry goes up in the air, literally like 30 seconds of Mars up in the air.
Yes.
High on life. And he's having this like mental...
It's just this like euphoric state or something.
Yeah, like the mental wash over himself about the true like Santa Claus experience, basically, because he's talking about the whole thing and he's flying away into the actual sky in the fucking van.
Yeah, and it's the voiceover reading The Night Before Christmas.
Yeah.
And that's the end of the movie, but the way that I envisioned it ending, like if you read this on a script, it's like the angry mob forces his van off of a bridge. The van flies off to the moon as a voiceover reads The Night Before Christmas as Phil falls like a dumb fuck. The end.
Well, when you force my van.
Dude, like, what the fuck, though? I did not expect that ending. Like, his van should have flown the fuck off and just...
And right into Phil.
God damn it, yes. Like, that should have been it, dude.
Let's not also forget, Phil fell into what looked like a pile of trash that was covered in snow.
Phil, you're right where you belong, you piece of shit.
It's like a tarp covered over just a bunch of boxes of shit.
But seriously, like, hold the fuck up. Like, that was our reaction as soon as that ending happened. Both of us just leaned forward on the couch and just was like, hold the fuck up. Wait a minute. Hold up. This motherfucker is just going towards the moon in a van. And fuck, man.
We need to edit that ending and have him play Shooting Stars at the end of it.
Van. Just bye.
That would make the ending so much better.
But that's Christmas Evil from 1980.
You know, the vibe I got off of this film heavily reminded me of Joker, like the newer Joaquin Phoenix Joker, because he was just... And this version, I'm not saying it was equally, you know, traumatic, but he was this mentally disturbed person that took this persona of himself too far and ended him up being way more traumatic than he wanted it to be. But it was just kind of like him being oppressed for what he's been through and who he is as a person. So it kind of gave me a little bit of that Joker vibe, like the movie it did.
I could see that. What if they just called it Santa?
Ho, ho,
ho.
Putting the smile on his face.
instead of paying, he's putting coals on his mouth. Like, and he's just sticking coals where they're just smiling like a snowman.
Or he's just like actually rubbing the coal smudge, like charcoal on his mouth.
Right. But yeah, like throughout the movie, Harry just gets more and more disheveled as it happens. And I think like that's a good visual representation of where he starts and then where he ends.
You know, I have to say both these films are good in their own rights. They both have their quirks. They both have their serious nature and tone. They have completely different approaches to the Christmas horror aspect. I only think Christmas Evil barely wins, only for the fact that, well, like we mentioned earlier, like Silent Night, Bloody Night was just a little too stretched out for us. And it was a little less enthusiastic or a little less believable as far as like the behaviors of the actors and the characters per se.
Yeah, all the people were very like cardboard with their delivery and shit.
So I would say Christmas Evil kind of takes a little bit of a lead on that. So I would say it wins.
Yeah, same here. For me, it's more of the same reasons that you brought up. But I think the thing that sold Christmas Evil the most for me is that it was very... It's very whimsical in a way. And I think that's what gave it the edge for me, is that it was a little more over the top, where the character of Harry was just really like out there, like fucking Pluto, with the way he would just like psychotically run to his little book, or he's like creeping in the bushes. And then goddamn, the fucking angry mob scene, like the British are coming. Like, I swear to God, that whole fucking sequence was just,
Christmas. The red coat was coming, literally.
Oh, fuck, man. But yeah, Christmas Evil wins this week's Cult Cinema Showdown. Congratulations.
Harry, you fat fuck.
Harry, you fat fuck. What were you thinking? Next week, we're going to take a look at the short film Treevenge. That's all I got to say. It's 15 minutes. It's on YouTube. Go watch the shit, and you'll understand why we're going to be talking about this glorious fucking short film from Jason Eisner, the director of Hobo with a Shotgun.
That was way too much explanation because you've already sold me on Treevenge.
Oh, dude, just the title alone.
Yeah.
And the synopsis, and we'll leave you with this, and that's it. The synopsis is like, you know, what if Christmas trees fought back?
The trees had enough. They're tired of being mistreated.
They're being treated like shit.
Yep. They want you to leave them alone, even though they're pine trees and they don't have leaves. They have needles. So they're heroin addicts.
Oh, my God. But yeah, prepare your anuses for that one.
Foreshadowing.
Yeah, that wasn't just me being a shit. That I'm literally foreshadowing that movie.
Jesus.
Jesus has nothing to do with this movie.
Nope.
So, other than that, if you'd like to listen to past, present, and future episodes, go find us at supermediabrospodcast.com. Go check out Odd Pods Media on all social media platforms to see what us and the other six shows on the network are up to, because there's something for everybody there.
There's a lot happening for your ear holes.
A lot happening 7 days a fucking week.
Mm-hmm.
If you feel so inclined to donate to us, go to coffee.com/supermediabros. It's in the show notes below. Come donate to us and give us some motherfucking energy drinks and or coffee.
Because none of this stuff is boring, but, you know, exhaustion kicks in. It's like, I can't go on.
Researching for content definitely puts the baggage under our eyeballs. Help keep us awake.
I mean, how else do we find shit like this? Fucking guy going crazy as Santa Claus, or a guy killing people on Christmas. Or any of the other shit that we talk about.
Oh, God.
How do we find out that stuff?
I don't know.
Heavy doses of research.
Mm-hmm. And then the Christmas Day edition will be Santa Slay starring Bill Goldberg versus Jack Frost, the not Michael Keaton one. I will always fucking say the not Michael Keaton one.
Because there's always going to be that one person that's like, the Michael Keaton?
No, not Michael Keaton.
Oh.
The not Vulture one. The not Batman one.
I'm not subscribing now.
Unsubscribe. Fuck you. Deleting your downloads from my library. Fuck you guys. But it's cool. We still have your downloads anyway. So you can go ahead and delete us if you'd like to. But no, seriously, that's another thing. Thank you guys for last month giving us one of our biggest download months in a long while. We really appreciate the shit out of it. So that means you guys are actually enjoying what the fuck we're doing. Do we have more than two people that listen to this? Probably now. Took us a while to get there.
Now we have three.
That's right. We have three people.
We got one extra person.
We got three fucking people that listen to this show, and we are eternally grateful for all three of you.
Yes.
Treevenge. Treevenge.
That's what happens to the people who unsubscribe. The three people will go against them. Treevenge.
Hey, it could be worse. It could be like the fucking trio of bastards that blew up our fucking podcast layer last year.
Oh, the Billies.
Yeah, the three Billies, you fucking bastards. We still haven't forgotten.
No.
We are still. If you've listened from last year on to now, yes, we're still trapped in the fucking landscape of the internet. We still haven't found our way back to the actual real world. Maybe we will find a way. That would be the Christmas miracle this year, to get us out of the internet land and back into real life.
Yeah, we're still in the synthwave grid.
Yeah.
Of the 80s computer.
And just hanging around.
Like, not the IBM computers. It's like just the green screen computers and shit.
That's it. But while you're still in internet land, check us out on facebook.com/supermediabros, at supermediabros_ on Twitter, and on Instagram at supermediabrospodcast. For the love of everything, come look at our stupid pictures.
Hell, we might even pop up in the middle of the screen and be like, hey, there we are.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
How's it going?
I see you're looking at pictures, huh?
I see you're looking at us. Now, can you help us get out of the internet?
And I start moving the screens like, no, you got to go back this way.
Keep going. Subscribe to our YouTube channel because Kevin Smith said so. We're not joking. Like, if you've heard the beginning of this episode, you'll know that we're not shitting you. Kevin Smith himself has told you to go listen to us and every other show on Odd Pods Media. So fucking go do it or else.
He's not going silent.
No, not at all. You know, he tells that stupid Amy story all the time, but then he actually opened his mouth and started talking about other shit that matters. So you should take a fucking hint.
You should be taking offense to this if you haven't listened to it.
Oh, my God. True. True.
Even more offense if you haven't listened to him. So.
Right. Are you guys ready for 2021? We hope you are. That's the very last thing I forgot.
Okay, seriously, who is not ready for this year to end?
No, we're going to kick the year off with a big fucking bang. Death Wish Month is coming. So do your homework. Yeah. I mean, we may even do a year-end review on how much we fucking hated 2020, but that's still to be determined.
Because, I mean, let's be honest. Who really needs a reminder of how much this year sucked? But y'all might like it. Because it's us. And we're telling the truth.
That's right.
Fuck this year.
Fuck this shit.
Big F-O-K. Fuck.
Failure.
Yep.
You ready to get out of here?
Yep. Cool. Get the fuck out of here.
Time to get the fuck out of here.
Fuck.
Thank you guys so much for listening. We will see you next week. Until then, I've been Midnight Agent Raw.
And I'm still not Santa Claus.
No, you're not.
Ew.
Sleigh's on.
Reindeer's off.
That's a van.
Oh, God damn it, Harry. Get down from there.